Warning, the following podcast features views and opinions that are not representative of the collective views of the Whispers groups. Some of these views may not be suitable for children. Accordingly, the producers and hosts of the Missy AE podcast must insist that no one attempt to take anything that is being said as representative of the views of any of the Whispers groups.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another edition of the Missy AE podcast. Tonight, we bring to you Sports Whispers Weekly, where we talk nothing but sports for the duration of the show. We have quite a bit to get to tonight. We have March Madness currently going on right now. And as a matter of fact, we have a two-point NC State lead over the Cinderella story Oakland. With 41 and a half seconds left to go in the game there, Oakland with the ball. So we will see what comes of that, whether or not NC State or Oakland will advance to the Sweet 16. We'll be talking a little bit about the Major League Baseball regular season that is set to get underway next week, as well as a preview of not just the NBA playoffs, but also the Stanley Cup playoffs in the NHL as well. And perhaps one huge baseball star may be under fire, so to speak, before the season officially even begins here. Just a reminder, if you guys want to subscribe to the Missy AE podcast, you can do so by going to blogtalkradio.com/MissyAE, or you can subscribe on any of our major podcasting networks such as iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and so on and so forth. Also, if you want to join in on the discussion, you can join any of the Whispers groups. If you are a Survivor or Big Brother fan, you can join Survivor Whispers or Big Brother Whispers. Or if you want to continue the talk involving sports after the podcast is over, you can also join Sports Whispers as well on Facebook. And I mean, quite frankly, we do have quite a bit of discussion ongoing in all groups, actually, after we do our weekly podcast. But we have Lou and Diane to start off tonight's show. I know Alex will be joining us in just a little bit. Lou, I think we have another upset in the making here, potentially, with Oakland. Yes. Oakland and NC State are tied at 66. And what did I say on your show earlier? I said if there was one game that I feel could have a potential upset, that it would be Oakland over NC State.
You did this, so you picked this as a Cinderella team, I take it.
Well, I mean, come on, when a team upsets Kentucky like they did in the first round, you know, and Kentucky plays in the toughest conference in all of college sports, the SEC.
Exactly.
If you go against an SEC team in the very first round and you upset them like they did Kentucky, especially, you know, a university that has such a storied history, especially over the last decade or two. You know, it's definitely, I kind of feel like they've got a little bit of a Cinderella factor, and right now they're actually going to have the ball last year as time is ticking down in regulation, tied at 66.
Wow. How much time?
You know, it kind of about 12.3 seconds left.
Well,
and
what channel is that on? Is that TNT or True TV?
TBS.
My next guess. Now,
it's also on True TV as well.
That's what I thought. Yeah, I forget. Where is Oakland located?
I forget, no, True TV shows the basketball games.
Well, they're related, Diane, so it fits. They're all part of the same network. So it makes sense.
Okay.
Well, what I was going to say, that I've heard of Oakland, but I forget where it is because I keep thinking it's, you know, Oakland, California. We have an Oakland here in New Jersey as well. I kind of forgot where Oakland was located. I mean, this particular basketball school.
It is in Auburn Hills, Michigan.
Oh, Taylor. Never mind.
Yeah,
great.
It's in Auburn
Taylor
Hills,
lives in
Michigan.
That's right. That's Taylor Phillips' hometown. My other colleague. So Yeah, that's the guy that when I occasionally had to leave the show because I had to go over to his show for the report. That's the same guy.
Oh, okay.
That's the
Taylor Phillips. It seems kind of surprising to me, Lou, that, you know, I mean, every
yeah.
year, of course, we get, you know, we get these massive upsets.
Sure.
over the last couple of years, but I mean, you have some teams, like I know Colgate was 1 year, Xavier
Lawrence
was another
Colgate.
Year. Colgate, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Is it in New York?
Well, it's an Ivy League school, so I think it's got to be okay here in the Northeast. I'm more familiar with the toothpaste than the school itself. Oh, okay. Never mind.
Oh, my God. Oakland throws the ball away with 1.3 seconds left.
Way to go, stupid.
NC State, or actually, I don't know. Maybe it might have deflected off of an NC State player. I can't tell from that angle.
I'll check.
But.
Oops.
Because it's tough
playing,
to tell with. Oh yep, it went right. It went well. Actually, here's the thing: it deflected off of the pinky,
yeah.
but I think the ball was still in the hand of the Oakland player. So that technically, that will be NC State ball.
Okay, we don't need to see what happened with another basketball game that happened back in a high school in my home state 2 weeks ago. If you recall that. We don't need one of those.
What happened?
Well, it was Camden and against another school up in the Shore area. Now, they thought they had the ball went off before the clock hit zero. At first thought, Massquan had won the game, but then they had to check with the officials and say that the ball did not leave the shot before the clock hit zero. And they gave the victory to Camden, and they were, like, you know, pretty much outraged, upset by that, you know. So I think there's going to have to be a rule change. Because remember, in high school basketball, they don't challenge the replay. There is no replay system. But I think now, under these circumstances, I think something has to be done. I don't think it will, but I think it should. So
mm-hmm.
Well, this is an automatic replay here right now, though.
Yeah, but this is different, you know. But we don't want to see the catastrophe that could cost them the game to have that happen again.
Right.
Right, that's true.
Yeah. And being that I'm from New Jersey, and I follow college high school basketball, you know, because my nephew played it. So, you know. Oh, no.
Yep, there we go. I don't know why Oakland is surprised here.
Yeah, just missed.
I don't know why Oakland is surprised here, because the ball has been given to NC State all the way at the other end. But I don't know why Oakland is surprised here, because the ball was still in their hand after it made contact with an NC State player.
Mm-hmm.
So, and here comes the shot. Ooh, yeah, just off the rim.
Oops.
That
was
close.
How far behind are you from me anyway?
I'm probably about maybe 15 seconds behind, I think.
I thought it was about 45 seconds, because about 30 seconds, because it went off. And
or maybe
30.
Yeah, I might be 30 seconds behind.
Are you watching on a regular set or the computer?
I'm watching it on my TV, on my 4K TV right now.
Okay, maybe that might be a little bit delayed anyways. But anyway, so because, you know, I saw the shot before, you know, probably you did. I didn't want to give it away.
Yeah, it might be because of my TV carrier. That might be why.
Oh, well, yeah, okay, that makes sense.
But Lou, yeah, we've had a couple of upsets already take place in this tournament.
Yes.
In particular, Yale over Auburn, 78-76.
I took Yale.
I gotta admit, you know, I took Auburn. Of course, you know, it's funny, the teams that I picked to make upsets ended up not winning. So, You know, I'm just horrible when it comes to attempting to pick upsets.
Well, you're not alone. You're not alone. I mean, half the country who fills out these brackets every year, you know, a lot of them get ousted by the time the second round hits anyway. So you're not alone. I mean, one year,
right,
I was off with a flying start in the first round. I was 31-2. 31-2. Looked like a sure lock to win this. When I got to the second round, the bottom fell out.
Yeah, I'll tell you. Obviously, I did. I didn't get a chance to ask you your bracket this year like I did last year for Whispers, because it was weird, the timing of everything, how they released everything this year. It didn't really give time to actually make multiple brackets, but I'll tell you right now, in the Whispers group, after literally the first couple of games, there were only 6 perfect brackets left, and now I believe there's no perfect brackets left right now in this.
What is the prize?
In our group, because of how unpredictable these games have been. I mean, obviously, we'll start off in the East. Starting off in the East bracket, UConn defeated Stetson in a blowout, which is not surprising because, in my opinion, UConn is probably the best team.
Yeah, where is Stetson, Steve? I mean, they're a very small school, doesn't get a lot of attention. So, where are they?
Stetson?
Yeah.
They are in Florida, I think.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I remember now. I heard it from. I just couldn't remember the location, but now you said Florida. Now I'm familiar with it. That's right.
Yeah, they're in DeLand, Florida. It says here.
Right. Okay.
The land of Florida.
No, DeLand.
DeLand.
Yeah.
I know where it is now. I know where it is now.
In DeLand, Florida. And
yeah.
So, I mean, it's not really surprising that UConn took it with ease, considering, I mean, come on, they're the best team, in my opinion, in the entire March Madness tournament this year.
Yeah.
So I was kind of surprised, though, that FAU dropped to Northwestern 77-65. I had FAU advancing to the round of 32 to take on UConn. But Northwestern, you know, obviously, those 8 versus 9 seeds are always toss-ups to begin with.
Exactly.
I wouldn't consider it an upset.
No, because they're fairly even matched. They can go either way. They can be in a lot of close games. So to me, 8 and 9, even if 9 wins, is that really an upset? No, not really.
No. Let me bring in Alex. Welcome to the show, Alex. We've so far we've been discussing March Madness and how unpredictable this year's tournament has been so far.
Yeah, there's always a lot of shocks and surprises. Anything can happen once these guys get in. Look at Oakland right now. I'm watching them dumbfounded. Fortunately, took NC State. But, like, anything can happen. These smaller programs that have momentum that snuck in just to get there, they're so excited and their fan base is so energized. They oftentimes play with more energy and more aggression than the big dogs that are, like, assuming they're going to kick the crap out of the small guy. It's like the little brother versus the big brother. Like, these smaller programs are so excited, and they bring more energy and momentum. I love seeing these upsets. And it's a 40-minute clip. It's not a 4-hour game. Anything can happen.
Well, you got to remember one thing too, guys, that, you know, they don't get a lot of attention because they're not like a big school like the Arizonas and the UCLAs and the USC's. They're very small schools, but they're very good in their own conference, and they have very good records. So I think we tend to underestimate these small schools because they don't play in, like, in the big conferences. And, you know, so sometimes these upsets, you know, can happen because, you know, they're a lot better than we think they are.
Yeah.
So you got to factor in that.
A lot of these, some of these guys didn't get letters. You know, you'll see a smaller school. The players will rise to the occasion because they didn't get the offer letters. They didn't get a scholarship offer to go play at Kansas or Duke or UConn. So when these guys get the chance to play one of the big heavyweight teams, they're pissed off. They're probably playing harder than the guys that play for Kansas or North Carolina. They want to knock off, you know, the big brother that gets all the acclaim.
Sure.
Yeah, they come in with a chip on their shoulder, basically.
Yeah. And they're in the spotlight. Wow, like Oakland's ever played on TV. They're living in a dream right now. This is like a movie for them.
Well,
Oakland got away there with that was almost a 3-second call in the paint. So they're very lucky
these past couple years especially. I love the Cinderella. I love the underdog stories because a lot of these guys, they're like Lou said, they're great players. And if you're playing college basketball, college sports is tough. Like these guys, they can all hoop. These guys are all the best player. You know, any of us walked into a YMCA in our hometown, these guys would be the best player by far in the town. If you're on TV, you're incredible. So it's like just because they're from Oakland or, you know, any of these small schools, they're still incredible players. And now in front of a couple million people now on TV, they get to show how good they are.
Right, but it's just like Lou said earlier, that the problem is that a lot of these unknown universities don't really get the exposure that that other universities get. So, mm-hmm. You know, it's definitely. I mean, we've seen it over the last couple of years. You know, Xavier, who came in as like an 11 seed, I think one year. I forget what seed they were. Were they 11 seed or? They were below 10. They were like 11 or 12 or 13 or something, and then they ended up making it all the way to the Elite Eight that year.
Now, I'll say one thing: I was not surprised though with the BYU against was it the 11th seed
against Duquesne?
Duquesne. I was not surprised though. I'm familiar with Duquesne. You know, I do follow the conference a little bit, and I know how they play. So I wasn't really too surprised, you know, by them beating BYU, which is also another non-big conference. So that could went either way, too. I mean, despite the fact it was a 6-11 versus seed, I wasn't really too surprised by that.
Yeah. Oh, and I like
right now Duquesne is getting destroyed by Illinois by 21 points, 34 to 13.
I like what Lou said too about keep in mind, I love what Lou said too, I agree, where the smaller schools, they have a lot of they have some positive energy going because they're coming in, they just won their own championship. So like these smaller schools, they're coming in so excited and ready to play and really full of confidence. And I know I've said it before, but like oftentimes the bigger schools, look at Kentucky. They go and they're like, oh, who's the small school we're playing? We're going to, you know, they're kind of like the fat cat. They're not really working maybe as hard as the small
school. There is a word for that, Alex.
They're assuming we're going to beat this at a small school, and the small school has a chip on their shoulder, and they're going to show the world, hey, in 20 years they can tell their kids, hey, I was good enough. I beat Kentucky on TV, even though I went to that small school. Like, they're like a hometown hero. Some of these games mean a lot more, I think, to the small schools until you get to the big Final Four.
Yeah. There's two words to look at that way.
Underdog. Well, that's one, whatever you call it.
No.
You take a look at Oakland defeating Kentucky like they did. One of their players ended up shooting 10 three-pointers that night. Yeah. You know, it just goes to show that all it takes is one huge performance for a team to break through that barrier. And right. I mean, you know, we're seeing it tonight with NC State. Oh yeah, NC State starting to create distance now, with about a minute 10 left to go in overtime.
And they were lucky to force it. Oakland had them on the ropes. Oakland could have won this. You're right, Steve. If someone gets hot, that guy was a six-year senior, Division II player, like walk-on, and then he just transferred to Oakland. He just transferred to Oakland. He told a reporter after the Oakland game, he's like, I know I can never, ever, ever play in the NBA, but you know what? If I get hot, I can play with anyone in the country right now. You got to love it.
I'd say never.
That's what he said.
Oh, we did have going through some of the other matchups. Obviously, we have San Diego State taking on Yale, which is set for tomorrow, I think.
Yes.
Yep.
San Diego State off of a 4-point win over UAB. They take on Yale, who, of course, upset fourth-ranked Auburn 78-76. That right there, I feel, is quite a bit of an upset too. Considering you have two SEC teams eliminated early on in this tournament. Kentucky obviously has a more storied history, but you know, Auburn's been up there as well over the past couple of years within the SEC. Very surprising, I feel. You know, Duquesne, obviously, you said earlier, Lou, that you weren't surprised by Duquesne upsetting BYU. Of course, they're getting their asses handed to them right now by Illinois by 21 points, 36-15, with about 6 minutes to go in the first half. Obviously, earlier today we had Iowa State advance with a 67-56 win over Washington State. Over in the West, we had a 85-69 win for North Carolina over Michigan State. So North Carolina advances to the Sweet 16, and right now it looks like NC State, with 17.1 seconds left, they are about to advance to the Sweet 16 with a 77-70 lead over Oakland here.
Winner lose tonight. I mean, incredible showing by Oakland. And you know what this will also do?
Sure.
Not only it's a lifetime memory for everyone involved, the fans, the alumni, the players, the coaches, but think about this. It'll really put them on the map now and on the radar. So they can get some really good recruits now. So this could help them for the next 10 or 15 years, if you think about it that way.
Potentially, yeah.
They're on the map. They're on the map now.
Especially when you take out Calipari in round one, I mean.
Yeah. Now, you know, now that the Oakland coaching staff, they send out some letters. Some kids are watching them this week. Now some kids are going to go, you know what, hey, how about maybe I look at Oakland. Maybe I'll go visit them. Let's play for Oakland. So, I mean, that's a huge win for their program.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, we've seen, you know, I brought up Xavier earlier. We saw Xavier get into March Madness a couple more times after that, you know, after that Elite Eight appearance a couple of years ago. Obviously, they're not in the tournament this year, but we saw them get in a couple more times after that. So, you know, I think if anything, this will be a good learning experience, especially for a team like Oakland, who upset Kentucky like they did. And of course, you know, they granted their ride here gets cut short in the round of 32, but definitely it's a good learning experience, if anything, and also it provides more exposure compared to what the university may have been getting to begin with.
Definitely.
So we also have Alabama, fourth-ranked Alabama, set to take on 12th-ranked Grand Canyon. I mean, I'm kind of surprised to begin with that Grand Canyon even advanced over St. Mary's, but
I'm definitely Grand Canyon over Arizona.
Yes.
Okay.
Honestly, I'm even kind of surprised that St. Mary's was ranked as high as they were.
Yeah, they didn't deserve that high ranking. But let's think about it. A few years ago, no one even knew that Grand Canyon had a basketball team, and look at them now. Unreal.
Right. And now they're in the round of 32. And who knows, maybe they can advance to get destroyed by North Carolina.
I'm going to be a little presumptuous about that.
Maybe, but, I mean, come on. Do you really think if they can somehow get by Alabama?
I mean, I know you're good, but they just can't, you know, assume they're going to be written off already. I mean, you know, that's give them some credit.
I know, but still, if you think that they can somehow get past Alabama, do you really think they stand much of a chance against North Carolina?
No, but I don't think it can be actually a blowout either. I don't think it's going to be a blowout loss. Oh, we just tied the game. Thank you. We can't assume, okay, we're going against a mighty giant. We're going to get whooped. It's going to be 112-32. You know, we can't assume that. I mean, you know, you can hang in there. You probably won't win, but at least you can make a competitive game out of it.
True.
You're like, oh, if you're against North Carolina, oh, forget it. You're going to score 50 points the whole game. Oh, please, you reach. No,
we also got sixth-ranked Clemson against third-ranked Baylor, and this may be the first year that Baylor is ranked high and they don't get upset very early on. Like what happened, I think it happened last year where Baylor was ranked high and everybody was expecting them to make a run, and then they got eliminated in the first round.
They pulled a couple up. You're right, Steve. They're kind of reminiscent. They're similar to a Purdue. They've had a couple. Like, everyone's been talking about them, and then they quickly get bounced out. I think Baylor, this team looks a little different. Like, they might be built to actually not choke the Final Four. I don't know if they're that good. You guys think they're Final Four material?
Well, I mean, they'd have to get by Arizona.
Guys, that's what, the run is over.
That's another, Arizona's another big money team, big name team that kind of comes up short sometimes, too. Interesting matchup.
Yeah. Well, guys, I hate to break it to you, but the Cinderella run for Oakland is over.
Yep, officially over with the, I think it was 79-73 final, I think it was.
Yes.
Now, of course, we had Arizona beat Dayton earlier today, 78-68. They advanced to the Sweet 16. They await the winner of Clemson and Baylor, which is set to take place tomorrow at 6:10. I don't know exactly which channel that will be on. It doesn't exactly say right here. But we also have locked in for tomorrow. We have Houston, number one Houston, taking on number nine Texas A&M. That was the one lower seed that I actually had correct, because when I immediately, as soon as I saw Nebraska taking on Texas A&M, my first thought was Texas A&M is way better than a nine seed.
Yeah.
So I immediately had to take them over Nebraska, and ultimately they did win by 15 points. But honestly, Houston is just like Baylor. Houston is another one of those teams that everybody was looking at as being a juggernaut team last year, and then they got absolutely hosed early on.
Yeah.
They were looked at as being a potential favorite to win March Madness last year.
Yes.
Before they absolutely shat the bed. I forget if it was round one or round two, but one of the first two rounds they completely shat the bed
They
ended up getting eliminated fairly early.
Think about this for those guys that are back, the upperclassmen on those like Baylor and Arizona and like Kentucky. Think about when they come back into these tournaments, all the pressure is on them because they already choked. They're from the bigger school. It's another advantage for the smaller schools.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, they're
but also at the same time, they have, you got to think as well, it's almost a little bit of a mind game in their sense because, you know, the last thing they want to do is choke a second straight, you know, choke a second straight appearance away.
Correct.
But, you know, Houston, obviously, they're going to hope to repeat or hope to avoid that same mistake tomorrow when they take on Texas A&M at around, I think it's 8:40. We also have Duke taking on James Madison. James Madison, who I guess, can we call it an upset over Wisconsin?
I think we do. I mean, James Madison is really a neighbor, so not just in college basketball, but in college football and a few of their other sport programs. So they have really, you know, made a name for themselves in the 23-24 college season and all sports in general. Yeah, I guess you'd call an upset, but look how they've done.
Wait a minute, didn't James Madison go undefeated in college football this year, or did they have one or two losses?
I think they had one loss, but still, you can't deny what the job they've done.
Right. Well, obviously, yeah. You can't deny, you know, you can't deny what they've done as a university all around, you know, not just in football or in basketball. But, you know, James Madison, that's another one of those universities that's starting to garner more attention.
Yeah,
you know, because of success that they've had.
Yeah, great point, Steve. Like that's rare too. It's hard enough to get one sport, you know, whether it's baseball, you know, basketball, college hockey, college football, they've really taken a huge leap in both football and basketball. I can't remember any college university doing that. Like they both, their football team was 10 times better than usual, and their basketball team's like come out of nowhere too. They're having a heck of a season at James Madison, you know, a heck of a sports year for the whole school.
Yeah.
Right. Now, we also, obviously, we saw NC State advance over Oakland. They await the winner of Colorado and Marquette. And I still can't wrap my mind around how the hell Colorado snuck by Florida with a 2-point win, 102-100. I mean, it's kind of surprising that first off, we don't normally see college scores that high. Second off, you know, Florida is usually a much better team than falling out of the round of 64. But you know, I mean, that just goes to show you that anything can once March Madness comes around, anything can happen, basically.
Yes, yes.
It really is so fun.
It
might be the best two or three weeks of sports. I mean, really, it's just there's just so much parity. It's the most unpredictable, maybe electric, exciting of any of the big sports. I mean. And even, like, high school or, like, growing up, guys, I don't know about you, but I was never really huge into it. Like, the last 5 or 7 years, like, blown away. It really is my favorite time of the sporting year now.
Yeah. Next to Christmas.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely see quite a few drama-filled tournaments when March Madness rolls around.
For sure.
Hey,
now, over in the Midwest, we got Purdue set to take on Utah State at 2:40 tomorrow. We also they will meet Gonzaga in the Sweet 16. Whoever wins between Purdue and Utah State, after Gonzaga absolutely handled Kansas earlier today, 89-68. And it's funny when you consider that the score was so much closer. It was basically a dead heat. Heading into halftime, and then come the second half, Gonzaga basically completely took over. You know, it's just like I said on your show earlier, Lou. Gonzaga is much better than a number five seed.
Oh, absolutely.
Do you think Gonzaga should be number one?
Gonzaga's usually up there. Yeah, they're usually up there at like two or three usually.
Had like the Chet Holmgren, Jared Suggs from the Magic. They usually have a lot of pro players. They do look really good. I agree. They should be higher. I was a little bit watching that game. They looked. Carolina was missing their best player apparently. Mm-hmm. But Gonzaga looks like they're one of the best teams in the country. Definitely not a five seed.
No.
Yeah, it was kind of surprising that they had them ranked number five. But then again, you know, this is the same basketball ranking team that completely shafted the Big East this tournament, when a lot of people believe that the Big East should have had more representatives in this year's tournament. When you consider some of the teams that were actually left out of the tournament, like Providence, for example, you know, Providence had been representing the Big East, I'd say at least the last 2 years in March Madness, I think.
Yeah, and then also to build on that, also Villanova. I saw an article or a picture or something, or a quick snapshot of their stadium they were in was like totally empty, the NIT. I mean, that's a program. Providence and Villanova usually are in there, especially Villanova. But, yeah, I thought both. And then what, Seton Hall, St. John's? Yeah, they had several teams.
Seton Hall was fourth ranked in the conference.
Seton Hall. Deep, really, obviously, great league. I mean, then you got Creighton, Marquette, UConn. That's a killer conference.
But, I mean, overall, yeah. If you want to look at overall records, the three teams that made it in, UConn overall is 32-3. Marquette is 26-9. Creighton is 24-9. And then you look at Seton Hall. Seton Hall is 22-12, and they got shafted. St. John's, I guess maybe St. John's you can make more of an argument. St. John's is 20-13. Providence was 21-14. Villanova, I don't really know that they would have made it because they were 18-16 and Butler was 18-15. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of hard to make an argument for those type of records.
Villanova kind of shot themselves in the foot with that record. You just, no matter what their reputation or how good they looked at the end, it's like you can't get in with that record because there's just too many other teams with better records. You can't let the whole league in. Hey, speaking of Creighton guys,
right,
have you
exactly.
seen a lot of that during the week? You know, like Iowa State, Steve, I asked you this afternoon. I haven't seen them at all, really. I'm brutally honest. Some teams I just don't see that much during the year. Did you guys watch any Creighton? Is Creighton really, really good? Or does Oregon have a shot?
Yeah.
They're about to tip off right now. Can Oregon beat them?
I hope they can.
Honestly, I mean, Creighton was 14-7 in the Big East. Oregon was 15-8 in the Pac-12. Just going based off of what I've seen in the past, Creighton, every single time they make it to March Madness, especially when they're a high-ranked seed, it seems like they always falter for some reason.
Yeah, they do.
I mean, you take a look at the last couple of games that Oregon has had. They've beaten Arizona. They've beaten UCLA. They've beaten Utah. They've beaten Colorado. They beat South Carolina to advance to the second round. Creighton, they lost to Providence. They've beaten Marquette. They've beaten Seton Hall. Villanova. But, I mean, just looking at the overall strength of schedule, I would give more credence, I feel, to a potential Oregon win than I would Creighton.
Interesting.
Yeah. Creighton, anyway.
The what?
They're in New York, aren't they?
I can look it up real quick. Maybe Illinois. They're not in New York. I'll look it up right now.
Yeah. Do you guys like Creighton's?
No.
Yeah, I know you don't. What about Alex and Steve?
They're in Nebraska. Small school, private Jesuit school in Nebraska. Founded in 1878. My little snapshot.
What the hell are they doing in the Big East?
I'm a little pitch. Creighton paid me for a little advertisement there. I'm just kidding. I was asking if they're any good. I really don't know too much about Creighton. Like Steve said, I know they always tend to get in on like a high seed, and they're always kind of quick to make an early exit. They've never really lived up to the hype, it seems like. Like, they always get a good ranking.
Honestly, I'm indifferent on them. I could care less, to be perfectly honest. You know, I don't really have a stake in them as much as I would like UConn or UMass. If Lightning struck every other team and allowed UMass to somehow make it into the March Madness tournament, which a snowball's chance in hell of that ever happening again.
Lou, I know you remember, Steve, you were probably a little bit younger, but I mean, Marcus Camby, when he was there, I remember they were like, for a couple of years, UMass was always in. They were always dangerous.
Yeah.
It's like Georgetown, since Iverson, Mutombo, Patrick Ewing. Georgetown used to be like They used to be like a top five team in the country for like 10 straight years. They were like a number one seed every year for a decade at least, I want to say. NBA players every year. And they just, what happened to them? But yeah, UMass used to be dangerous. And now it's like, what do they just have like a new dean or a new vision where they just like don't really care that much about sports anymore? It sucks to see it.
They really don't.
It's like, what happens?
Well, they're more into hockey, if anything.
And they're both great schools, too. It's not like they're just built off of sports. I know they both, especially Georgetown is very academic, like Notre Dame. You got to have the smarts and the skills. But they both used to be powers. I don't know. I got off topic, but I was just thinking about that. UMass used to be awesome.
Yeah. I mean, just look at it like this. Their basketball team – well, actually, I shouldn't say that. Their basketball team was kind of average this year. Their football team sucks. Hockey is kind of average. You know, basketball is just getting back to being average. It's hard to explain when it comes to UMass. I guess a lot of it just has to do with recruitment. You know, they're not on the same level as, say, UConn, for example. You know, many players would rather go to UConn before they would go to UMass.
Mark.
You know, you'd have players going to Syracuse or going to Villanova before you'd see them going to UMass.
Sure.
Why, though?
You'd see players... No, they're average, but it's just, apart from after the Marcus Camby years, it's like there hasn't really been any sort of momentum for them, basically. I mean,
once you lose the momentum, Diane, it's just from what I've seen, like it's different than the pros, right? Because you can be in the lotto, you can be a last place team in the pros, and then guess what? You get a Connor McDavid or a Shaquille O'Neal, you get the number one pick overall. But in college, if a coach leaves, Jay Wright, look at Villanova. They used to be like Final Four every year, and now they didn't even make the tournament. Camby left. UMass had a couple bad years, and then suddenly all those kids that are in that area of the country, they're like, oh, they suck. Oh, we're not going there. And once they lose that magic, Steve, like you said, momentum, 5 years later, they're not getting any of these top recruits they used to get. It's like everyone forgets about them. The kids go to
They made the NIT tournament a couple of years from 2008 to 2017 under Derek Kellogg. They made the NIT tournament for 2 years, and then the last time they made March Madness was in 2013-2014 when they had a 24-9 record under Kellogg.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, you know, it's like after that year where they lost in the first round, things just started going downhill, essentially, for them.
Mm-hmm. Frustrating. That's what happens. Strange. Hard to get it back once you lose
your
Magic.
Yeah, and right now, actually, Derek Kellogg is an assistant coach for Creighton. So, you know, that right there just shows you that, I mean, Creighton, they have multiple years of experience within their coaching staff.
Yeah. It sounds like from how you guys broke it down that Oregon's like more athletic and more fun. Creighton's kind of just like that gets in with a high seed. And like you said, the momentum word is so important in college basketball. Seems like Oregon's got momentum. I'm leaning towards the Ducks now. It's going to be a good game.
Oh, and I should add too that in 2014 they lost in the second round to Tennessee that year, 11th ranked Tennessee. UMass came in as a, let me double check. They came in as a sixth seed under Derek Kellogg that year.
Oh, wow.
Right.
Yeah, they were actually ranked above Kentucky.
Man. Well, hopefully they can get it back. Yeah. Got to get the starts of the recruits, man. Coach staff, they got to find a couple of gems. Maybe find the best players in, like, the Boston and Providence area. Start locally. There's good players everywhere. There's good players everywhere, and it's always easier at whatever school you run to find kids in your backyard.
Right.
Not going to recruit kids from California right now that are going to want to play at UCLA or Duke or Carolina, but they can at least get the best players in the Northeast area, some of them.
Right. And obviously the winner of Oregon and Creighton, they will take on the winner of Tennessee and Texas, which right now Tennessee holds a 10-point lead on CBS over Texas, 38-28 in the second half there. So, you know, needless to say, I mean, just to show you how bad I'm doing right now, one of my brackets has a 44.8 win percentage. So that right there should tell you how busted some brackets have become this year when it comes to the results.
At least give the courage to look up your numbers. I'm like wearing a blindfold. I won't even look at the computer screen. I don't even want to know what my numbers are. My bracket exploded about 10 minutes into it, the whole thing.
Which one? Which one did you sign up as?
I had a couple. Just my like longtime user. So my last name Wiser 40.
Oh, okay, yeah. Hang on.
Maybe it's like somewhat not terrible, but it's not good. it's like the NFL gridiron picks. I was just like,
mediocrity will get you nowhere.
Alex, it didn't register your picks. For some reason.
Oh, good. I saved some face. I'm better off that way. I meant
True.
To. I told Jim I did. I thought I registered him. Huh.
Yeah, for some reason, I'm looking at it right now, and it doesn't show like a winner's pick or anything. It didn't. For some reason, I guess it didn't register your pick.
Oh, good. Saved it from the embarrassment. Always next year.
Yeah.
My best chance to be successful picking games is just not pick them.
But you know, we move from March Madness though over to the pros because we do have the playoffs looming in professional in the NBA, and from what it appears like right now, pretty much we got a general gist of who is going to be in the playoffs right now. As of right now, only four teams have, there's only four spots remaining essentially, or I should say four teams are alive on the outside looking in, though as it appears right now, the way things are going, just to bring up here in the NBA, for the Eastern Conference, the Brooklyn Nets and the Toronto Raptors, the bell may be tolling very soon for you guys. Toronto losing your last 9 games, Brooklyn losing your last 6 games. You're falling behind. Brooklyn's about 5.5 out of the play-in tournament, and Toronto is 8 games out of the play-in tournament. So, needless to say, the Eastern Conference, it looks like they're about to be solidified when it comes to play-in tournament and just playoff spots in general. Over on the Western Conference side, Houston, you're 2 games behind Golden State for the final spot. And Utah, you are 7.5 games behind. So Utah, you're about to be eliminated. If anything, Houston is the only team left in contention there. We'll go down basically bit by bit here right now. The way that the playoffs look right now, if the season were to end today, the Boston Celtics in the Eastern Conference, with a 56-14 record, and currently right now they hold a 110-102 lead over the ninth-ranked Chicago Bulls. As the playoffs would begin right now in the play-in tournament, I believe Chicago would face Atlanta the play-in tournament, but. Second seed as of right now is the Milwaukee Bucks at 45-25, 11 games back of Boston. Cleveland in the third seed at 43-27, 13 games back. The New York Knicks in the number 4 seed, 14 games back at 42-28. The Orlando Magic, they are in the fifth spot right now at 42-29, 14.5 games back. Followed by the Indiana Pacers at 40-31, 16.5 games back. Then as far as the play-in tournament goes, it looks like if the season were to end today, Miami would host Philadelphia in the play-in tournament, with both teams being tied at 38-32, but Miami holds the tiebreaker. Due to in-season or season series record. And Chicago would take on the Atlanta Hawks in the first elimination game, where it would basically be, obviously, win and you stay in, lose and you're done. So basically, if you're the seventh or eighth seed heading into the play-in tournament, you essentially have 2 shots to make it in, or to make it officially into the playoffs as the seventh or eighth seed.
I still don't like it. Old school, but I still don't like the whole thing. It's like you see like a couple of maybe not even 500 teams that might get in the playoffs. It's like it just waters it down to me. Adam Silver. I don't really dislike him as a commissioner, but he you know, more money, more teams involved, more advertising money.
Right.
Jazz. But you know what I mean? It's like, I don't know, I'm old school. Baseball wild cards, okay, that's cool. But, like, to have it's basically having 9 or 10 teams in each conference, that's the only sport that does it. Hockey doesn't do that at all. I don't really like the plan, but whatever.
Another thing we got to look at, too, is, you look at Philadelphia at 38-32, but everybody's got to remember they've been playing without Joel Embiid, who has had who's been recovering from a torn meniscus, or a torn meniscus flap, I guess they put it, whatever the fuck that means. I consider it a torn meniscus, but they call it a torn meniscus flap, whatever, I guess. It's still a torn meniscus to me. So I think that if Embiid was healthy, Philadelphia right now would have a guaranteed playoff spot.
Oh, absolutely.
That they would be guaranteed. They wouldn't be in the play-in tournament right now. They would be among the top six.
Definitely. Yeah, I mean, talking MVP talent, missing most of the year. It's just crushing. They're still hanging around. Maxie's awesome.
Yeah.
Championship, I mean, yeah, they're a lot better with Embiid. They're going to be dangerous once he gets back. But who knows if he's really going to be fully healthy when he comes back.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that's another thing, too, that you don't exactly know, especially with big men. I think it affects big men even more, that, you know, you don't know what a player, you know, what version of that player you're going to get coming back into, you know, coming back from that injury. I mean, we've seen what happened with Robert Williams when he went down with a torn meniscus, you know, for the Boston Celtics. He came back within about 3 months, but he still wasn't, he didn't have the same explosiveness. And if anything, he's been injury prone ever since. Since that first injury. So, you know, there's a real risk, I feel, that Embiid might undergo the same problem.
Yeah, you're right. I think with big men, it's more weight. It's riskier. Plus, Embiid has a big injury history, too, with his legs. And then it's like, can he play a lot of minutes? Are they going to be comfortable? I know he's an MVP candidate. You want him right back in. But you'll see other sports. If you rush your guy back, the rest of the team is not used to playing with him, maybe. You've got to, like, ease him in, but it's, like, do or die. You got to win a series. So, I don't know. If he's not really – wouldn't even rush him back because he's the franchise and he's missed, like, you know, a couple hundred games in his career already. That's risky to bring him back this year. It's risky to bring him back this year.
What would you do, Lou, if you were the Philadelphia 76ers right now? You find yourself – in the number 8 seed entering the play-in tournament, you know, would it even be worth bringing back Embiid and taking that risk that, you know, he doesn't re-injure himself?
Yeah, you got to factor in that, because if he does, then the Sixers really are going to go far in the playoffs. So, you know, I don't think it's going to be, you know, worth that risk to bring him back.
Yeah, and it's not even just that, Lou. It's not even just, you know, they wouldn't go far in the playoffs if he gets re-injured. But you also take a look at his long-term health. If he re-injures himself, who knows if he'll even be ready for next season.
Yeah, it could be very damaging to himself and to the team. So I wouldn't do it.
Yeah, I agree with that. I would if I was
no point.
I look at how this team. If I'm Nick Nurse right now, I look at how this team is, and I say, okay. Assuming we get by Miami, or if we can't get by Miami, if we can somehow get by Atlanta or Chicago, do we realistically have a shot against either Boston or Milwaukee in the first round if we bring back – if say Embiid is ready to come back in the first round?
Milwaukee,
do we
Boston.
Realistically have a shot?
Boston,
you got to beat anything might be in the same place twice. Forget it.
Milwaukee, they could beat – they cannot beat Boston. I don't think anyone in the East can. Yeah, even with Embiid, remember they had a couple. This isn't the best Sixers squad they've had with or without Embiid. It's not their year. So, and he's had so many injuries.
Right.
I would not expect. They're not going to win the championship with him. And like you guys said, imagine if he gets re-injured. He's missed a ton of time. It's like it's too risky. They're not beating
Boston. Right, exactly. I got to tell you too, with Boston, you know they've. Over the last couple of games, they've been – now, granted, some of them have been against Detroit, but they've been cycling starters these last couple of games. Like, they've like to give you, for instance, yesterday, they had Peyton Pritchard and Sam Hauser in the starting lineup. And Sam, I got to tell you, Sam Hauser, oh boy. Ever since getting the opportunity to be a starter, he's been shooting.
Yeah, their bench is awesome. Those guys could start for half the league, or you know, at least several games. I think Hauser looks like a starter when he plays a lot. There's no
Hauser's
drop off.
Hauser's got 20 points tonight against Chicago.
I've noticed that, Steve. They have Jalen Brown. Porzingis is always he's awesome. He's always going to miss some time, but they've been giving Tatum and Brown randomly like nights off, and then they still score like 140 points. Like they just don't stop scoring. They're so deep.
Well, you know, I actually excuse Porzingis. You know, a lot of people say that Porzingis is injury prone, but I think a lot of it this year, and there we go, another three by Hauser, 23 points for him tonight. You know, I look at Boston's handling of Porzingis, and I say that it's, in my opinion, wow, actually, Hauser is 7 of 8 from three tonight.
Wow.
I look at their handling of Porzingis, and I see it more as injury management as opposed to, like, the games that he's missed, a lot of them have been, oh, he could have played, but we decided that it's better to be precautionary.
Because,
gotcha. You know, he's gotten a lot of criticism for missing a lot of games in his career. But I see the way that Boston has handled it this season as, well, we have Horford, we have Cornett, we have Tillman that can fill up time with him not playing. So
let's say they have such a cushion. They can afford to, record-wise, they can afford to give him nights off, keep him healthy and rested for the playoffs. Makes sense.
Right. And, you know, who says Al Horford still can't play? 23 points and 8 rebounds tonight against Chicago in the starting lineup. People who say Al Horford can't play. But, yeah, you know, I'm not gushing right now at the fact that I'm not saying that Boston, you know, is automatically going to win the NBA Finals this year. But looking at how they've played this season and how they've managed matchups and everything, they have to be at least a front runner for the NBA Finals.
I mean,
on paper.
Think about how close they've been for the last 2 or 3 years, and then they add Porzingis and Jarrue Holiday. So it's like,
right.
Come on, man. Got to be. I'm not jinxing them, but they got to. They hopefully they can get it done this year because it's going to get a lot harder. If they can't get it done this year, it's like it's there for them, I think. And then out west, I mean,
I'll tell you though, they've been playing the last few games without Holiday, who's been dealing with dead arm. I think what they may do, they may keep him out of the lineup until the playoffs officially begin. But I think a lot of it has to do with you know, like I mentioned before, you take a look at the performance of their bench, and you plug in Pritchard for Hauser, or I'm not for Hauser. You plug in Pritchard for Holiday. You plug in Hauser for Brown, and it's like it doesn't matter if Brown is out or if Holiday is out or if Porzingis is out. They have people that they can plug in. They have depth, basically. I mean,
that's giving Pritchard and Hauser and the younger bench guys so much confidence too. So when they're playing less minutes in the playoffs, they'll be even more effective. And they're just getting better. Because Brown and Tatum already know how good they are. Now Pritchard and Hauser believe in themselves. So they're getting better.
Yeah,
the whole roster is going to be a lot better by the playoffs.
I mean, I'll tell you right now, Hauser and Pritchard are basically number 6 and 7 off of the bench.
Yes.
And you had Horford. Apart from Horford, I mean, Horford is obviously the first big off of the bench, but, you know, Hauser and Pritchard, they're easily the first two wings or guards off of the bench.
Yeah, it's nice. And Thielman's a good banger, good big man off the bench, too. Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
Do you guys see Boston? Right now, unless there can't be any terrible injuries, but, like, they should win it all. I think this is here. What is one team you guys think could beat them?
Denver,
yeah.
Yeah.
In my opinion, not just because they're the defending champions, but I look at how they matched up against Denver earlier this year, and Denver took advantage of them physically. So,
yeah.
I mean, it was a close game, but you know, it never seemed like, oh, Denver is in danger of losing this game.
They are really, really, really good this year. But, yeah, I mean, I think Boston has more talent, I think. But when you're going against the Joker, it's like when you used to go against Kobe or, you know, Jordan. It's like when he's in the zone red hot, it really doesn't matter who's playing against him. They're probably winning the game. Yeah, Denver is scary. Denver's really dangerous, obviously.
Now, that game has officially gone final. The Boston Celtics, with the 124-113 win over Chicago, so Boston improves to 57-14. And I would assume at some point they're kind of close to clinching the best record in the league, I think.
Wow.
I think they need like a couple more wins or a couple more losses from Denver or Oklahoma City for that to happen. But speaking of which, moving over to the West, Oklahoma City, can you say scary?
Yeah.
Can you say scary with those players, and not to mention the stockpile of draft picks that they've accrued?
They have two more lottery
picks
next year.
They are 49-20.
Yes. Yeah. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is like, he's got to be. He's the top five player in the league now. And former Kentucky guy who they got for Paul George from the Clippers. He's top five player. He's got to be. And then they have Chet Holmgren, 7'1", you know, playing all over the place, shooting threes, dunking the ball. That's a lethal duo, and they're both so young. Yeah, and like you said, Steve, they have a lot more picks next year in the next, like, 3 or 4 years. That dynasty coming in, coming up. They might make
it. If not dynasty, they're basically, they've got to be, they're going to be at least in the running.
Yeah. Yeah, dynasty is a little bit too much. I over-exaggerated there. They got to still prove it. But, I mean, when you have that duo, like such a talented duo, and then so many more picks coming in. And their whole roster is young, too. They have other, like, really good young role players, too. They're really good. They can score 150 points tonight. I don't know if they have enough defense in Howard, but, you know, Ed Holmgren's great. You guys know him from Gonzaga, but he's like a beanpole. He's very thin. That's the best big man they got. He's got to go against Jokic. So it's like, ooh, that's not a good matchup for them. Next year they'll add, you know, they might add.
Right.
They might add, you know, the UConn center. They could add Edie, the 7'4" guy from Purdue. Think about what Oklahoma, they can draft another two awesome players next year. So they're really just getting started up.
Right, but I mean, you know, let's just take a look at some of these stat lines here. Holmgren shooting 17.1 points per game. Let me get a look at the totals. 8 rebounds per game, 2.6 assists per game. You know, he's one of the front runners for Rookie of the Year. Jalen Williams, 19.2 points per game, to go along with 4 rebounds and 4.5 assists per game. You have Josh Giddey, who of course was involved in you know, in that underage scandal earlier this season, 11.5 points per game off of the bench. Lugens Dort, 10.8 points per game. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, like you said, one of the top players in the league now, 30.8 points per game. When you consider what he was, you know, in the early years of his career. And then you have some solid contributions off of the bench, too.
Yeah. And look at Shai. Shai also does, he rebounds, assists, plays defense. He's just like an awesome player. Yeah, and that, like you just said, the stats of, what, Williams, Giddey. Who's the other guy you just mentioned? Yeah. Dort, yeah, Luigi Dort, they have like 7 or 8 guys that all play well and they play hard every night. They're deep. And all those guys are young.
Yeah.
They're all getting better. They're all getting better every week, every month out there.
Yeah, so just wait till they, and they're third in the league in points per game with 120.7 points per game as a team. Third in the league.
And remember,
they're
the same team that got rid of Harden, Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, and like, oh, what are they doing? Well, look at them now. They stockpiled all those picks, and they've been hitting home runs on all those draft picks. That's how you rebuild.
Right. I mean, they're definitely going to be a team to watch, I feel, in the NBA playoffs this year. Right now, they're the number one seed. Just a half game ahead of number 2 seeded Denver at 49-21. Then you have the Minnesota Timberwolves in the third spot at 48-22. The LA Clippers in the fourth spot at 44-25. They are 5 games back. Followed by the New Orleans Pelicans at 43-27, 6.5 games back. Sacramento is 41-29, 8.5 games back. A 3-way tie between Sacramento, Phoenix, and Dallas. And because of head-to-head records, Sacramento is right now in a guaranteed playoff spot.
Wow.
What do you got next, Golden
State? If the season were to end today.
Wow. So it's interesting.
Meanwhile,
the East has gotten a lot better, but the West is still pretty deadly. The West isn't as dominating. The West isn't as clearly dominant over the East anymore, but the West is still pretty deadly. The West still has some real heavyweights.
Yes.
Right. The Phoenix Suns, if the season were to end today, the Phoenix Suns would take on the Dallas Mavericks in the play-in tournament as the 7th and 8th seeds. Meanwhile, we would have the Lakers and the Golden State Warriors in a winner-take-all matchup.
Wow.
The play-in tournament.
Golden State versus
the Warriors. Mm-hmm. It would be L.A. versus Golden State.
Oh, wow. That'd be interesting. Wow. What's the setup again? Is it best of 3 or is it 1 game? The play-in?
No, it's 1 game.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's one game for the play-in.
LeBron, I wouldn't want to play against LeBron James in a play-in. Lakers can win that one.
No.
Basically, it goes like this: the nine and ten teams play against each other. The winner of that takes on the loser of 7 and 8. Obviously, the winner of 7 and 8 becomes the number 7 seed, and the winner of 9 and 10 advances to take on the loser of 7 and 8, and the winner of that game becomes the 8 seed.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I'm easily confused. Adam Silver did a good job of easily confusing me. I'm already easily confused as it is.
I'll tell you right now, this would be the one time I would be rooting for L.A.
Yeah,
I'm
with you.
Take Golden State out of the running. This is the one time I will root for L.A.
Anything to make Draymond Green miserable, I'm a fan of.
Yeah.
I do not want to see Steph Curry in the NBA playoffs again.
Well, he can score 50 points any night. Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
They've had their fun in the Suns. Let the other guys, like, they won't go
exactly.
away.
Exactly.
They're still dangerous.
Well, right now, I mean, right now, looking at if the season were to end today and we ran down the list, who do you guys have representing the East and who do you have representing the West in the NBA Finals? If the season, you know, just based off of what the playoff teams would look like if the season were to end today.
Will, what do you think, Ben?
Well, as much as I hate to say it, I mean, I think we know the goal with the Celtics, of course. Between the Celtics and the Yuck. And for the West, I think they went for that. I got the East pick, of course. For the West, I think I would have to go. I have to go with the Nuggets as they try to defend their title, and I would probably take Nuggets and Wolves. I'm not sold on the Clippers just yet. I mean, because every time they even try to get, you know, in the deep rounds of playoffs, they always find a way to lose it. So I'm not sold on the Clippers.
Yeah, I agree, Lou. Clippers have Leonard, George. I cannot stand Harden, as everyone in the world knows by now. But yeah, the Clippers are so talented, but I don't really believe in them to be a championship team.
No,
that's a whole different level. That's a lot harder than just being really talented to win it all.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's like not the sexy pick. It's kind of the boring. It is what it is. I mean, until someone shows me otherwise, I'm going to take the Nuggets out of the West. Nuggets, Celtics. I think Celtics and Saturday to get it done.
You know what? I actually agree with that. I would say it's – I feel it's still going to be the Nuggets out of the West. Out of the East, I would say it has to be either Boston or Milwaukee. You know, Cleveland, they always trip over themselves. I would have put Philly in the conversation if Embiid wasn't injured. I would have put Philly in the conversation, but again, there's always the possibility that Miami may pull something out of their ass like they did last year, and I hope we don't see another Miami Finals. I just don't. I hope we don't.
Steve, like you said, with Philly, I'll match you on. They're decimated by injuries. They were playing really bad, awesome basketball. They're missing two of the three best players. I think next year they'll be like top three or four in the East. I really think so. Because Brunson's like a top 10 player now. And they're missing Randall and Ananobi. They're missing Randall and Ananobi. They're missing two of the three best, and they're still what? The five seed? The four seed? I mean, they're having a hell of a
No,
game.
Four
the
seed.
Four, the type of
four seed.
Missing two of their best three, and they're the four seed. So imagine them fully healthy. Next year the Knicks will be like right there with the Celtics and Bucks, I think, if not this year.
I mean,
and also you take into consideration too that they got rid of their anchor in Fournier as well.
Yeah.
I mean, they're looking nice next year. I'm thinking just Celtics Nuggets. They're the two favorites, but it's like it's true. I think it's the most to happen.
And also, you know, I give a lot of credit for Boston. I give a lot of credit to their assistant coaching, because last year when they went to the playoffs, obviously under first year coach under first year coach Joe Mazzulla, you know, Mazzulla, he still had coaching staff?
Brad Stevens.
No, not Brad Stevens.
Doc?
No, he still had Ime Udoka's coaching staff
last year.
And, you know, there was a lot of a question as to whether or not the coaching staff was fully all in last season, considering that they felt that Udoka should have still been the head coach. But, I mean, you look at who they brought in this year. They brought in Sam Cassell. They brought in Charles Lee, two of the top assistant coaches in the NBA. I mean, it's they made a lot of improvements on their coaching staff for this season. And actually, they can credit Sam Cassell for Jason Tatum's improved post game that he has now. So it's definitely, you know, I feel that the assistant coaching staff changes have played a lot more of a pivotal role this season than some people may think. Yeah.
I also think one real quick observation I've noticed. One, Jaylen Brown's gotten even a lot better. He can be the number one. And I know Tatum's unbelievable. I'm not trying to diss Tatum. I know he's an all-world incredible player, Hall of Fame player. He's got to get it done in the clutch in the playoffs this year. Because Brown's kind of becoming like the big dog. Tatum almost like in the fourth. Yeah, I've noticed that a couple times on like the big TNT games, like the nationally televised games this year, Tatum hasn't shot as much as Brown. It's kind of different this year. It's almost like Brown's the 1A and Tatum is the 1B at times. It used to be totally opposite.
Yeah, the big problem for both guys is, number one, Jaylen Brown still can't hit free throws worth a shit, especially in big games. And number two, Jason Tatum, I feel like they try to force things to him as opposed to, for example, there was one game this year where Kristaps Porzingis absolutely lit up the opposition. So you would think with the last shot of the game, with the game on the line, you would think they would have gone to Porzingis, right? That they would have drawn up a play for Porzingis.
Right.
They give it to Tatum, and it's the same fucking thing every single attempt. You know he's going to dribble it out and then do a fade for his final shot. Everybody sees it coming every time. Yeah. I think the biggest thing is obviously it comes down to matchups, but if you're down in a crucial point in the game, you have to carefully look at, okay, do I really want to give Tatum the ball here with this amount of time remaining? Or do I try to get the ball to like Derek White, for example, or to Kristaps Porzingis, whoever has the hot hand that game?
That obviously makes the Celtics a lot more dangerous. Because, you know, in the big spots, a good defensive team, like even like the Knicks, where if you're playing a good defensive team on any night, they'll just like double team. They'll just harass and like, you know, try to mug and really be physical and bully Tatum. Now it's like it shouldn't have to always go to Tatum, because Brown's proven he's almost just good. You know, Porzingis is lethal. So it's like the Celtics are more dangerous now. They don't have to just try to force it to have Tatum shoot all the time. And, I mean, the last couple of years, Steve, Tatum sometimes has fallen a little short in, like, those big fourth quarters. So the Celtics are a lot better off this year, I think, with Brown being so awesome now. And with, like, Porzingis and Derek White's gotten a lot better. I mean, they shouldn't have to try to force it to Tatum every time with, you know, 5 minutes left in a game seven. You know, because you know that's going to happen. If they're playing the Nuggets in the finals, you know, you want one of those other guys to be able to hit a big three, and they can. I mean, the whole team's gotten a lot better this year.
Right. Now, obviously, we'll see if Mazzulla has learned from anything as the season has gone on, this season. But moving over to the world of hockey, because not only do we have the NBA playoffs close to coming to fruition, but we also have the Stanley Cup playoffs on the horizon as well, with just a few weeks remaining in the regular season here. And right now it pretty much looks like the playoff picture is starting to really come into focus as we head into these last couple of weeks. First, in the Eastern Conference, in the Atlantic Division, you have the Boston Bruins leading the way with a 41-16-15 record, good for 97 points, a 3-point lead on the Florida Panthers, who have a 45-20-4 record, good for 94 points. First off, I got to say this. The Boston Bruins, if you were to have taken a look at what this team looked like on paper this season, granted, this may be the, just a fair bit of warning. This may just be the Boston homer in me, me being a Boston fan. Yeah. But, if you were to have taken a look at this team on paper, them losing Patrice Bergeron and David Krejci to retirement this offseason, you would look at this team and go, how the hell is this team going to even potentially make the playoffs, let alone possibly win their division or be one of the best teams in the league? And lo and behold, here we are, fast forward to where we are now, and not only are they the best team in their division right now, but they lead the entire NHL in points by 1 point. It's really surprising to me.
Yeah, I mean, you guys definitely have more knowledge and more insight, more experience following hockey. But I was impressed though. I was thinking, you guys have really gotten me back into it hardcore the last 2 years, which is great. But just watching Boston, I had that feeling. I kind of did call. That's one of the few times I actually kind of called something correctly as far as like predicting that. That a lot of teams were saying, oh, they lost a couple of stars, they're not going to be as good. And lo and behold, I mean, some of the younger players really emerged. And sometimes that really helps teams get better in the long run, because a lot of role players can step up. And maybe, I mean, Steve, what do you think? Are they deeper now and, like, more consistent and less reliant on a couple big names? Because maybe that's what it is.
I wouldn't say deeper, because – I mean, you take obviously no team is going to be as deep as they were last year, where they had Todd Bertuzzi, Tyler Bertuzzi, a guy who's normally on the first or second line. You had him playing on the third line. You had Dmitry Orlov, normally a top defensive player, sometimes playing on the third defensive line. I mean, that's literally how stacked that the team was last year from the trade deadline. It's when you compare last year's team to this year's team, I mean, obviously last year's broke records. But this year's team, I mean, it's been more of a youth movement. You see guys like John Beecher, Mason Lowry, who this is his rookie season. He's been up and down from the AHL, and John Beecher the same thing. Although in my opinion, I feel that neither one should have been sent down because of how well they performed this year.
What's the point?
And also, you have to keep in mind as well that Boston, part of their success has been that they've been rotating their goaltending duo of Linus Ullmark and Jeremy Swayman. And actually, as a matter of fact, they tried to trade Ullmark at the trade deadline this past trade deadline, but Ullmark had rejected a trade to, I believe it was, the Los Angeles Kings. So ultimately, they ended up keeping Ullmark because of his no trade clause, and that's going to become a problem, I think, in the off season, because they're going to have to pay Jeremy Swayman because he was signed to a one-year extension. I mean, technically, Swayman is still going to be a restricted free agent, but they're going to have to come to terms and agree to a deal with him at some point this offseason. And he is going to get paid like an elite goaltender would get paid. You know, he's gonna get one of those big money contracts that kind of similar to what Ullmark's contract is right now, where he's making $6 million per year. When they signed him to a 4-year $6 million per year type of contract when they originally signed him. And I think, you know, you take that, you also take the fact that you have players, young players like Trent Frederick, Jake DeBrusque starting to take on bigger roles. I mean, Trent Frederick, you know, he's set a new career high in goals for himself this year with, I believe he's up to 18 goals now. You know, a guy who was projected to be a career third, maybe fourth line, or no, a career fourth line guy who has been playing most of the season in a third line role. You know, and he's been excelling. Obviously, they're going to have to agree to an extension at some point with Jake DeBrusque as well. And then you have, I think, in my opinion, the biggest factor is the fact that you've had players like Pavel Zacha and Charlie Coyle get asked to take on a more demanding role with the departures of Patrice Bergeron and David Krejci. So they're asked to basically take on the roles of a first-line and second-line center. And then you also have the veterans who the Bruins signed in the offseason to veteran minimum contracts, like literally 1 year, $1 million, guys who should be making more than that. And, you know, they're putting up stellar numbers this year. I guess you could say it's a depth sort of thing, Alex, but, you know, it's a whole number of things. You know, well, like you said, players are stepping up.
Yeah, and I mean, we're all smart with passionate sports fans. We're all smart about sports and looking at different teams and in different sports, right? So whenever you're at a great school, like you see, like, Duke might graduate two or three NBA guys. They're going to suck next year. You know they have awesome players on their bench just waiting to get their opportunity, right? So the Bruins, anyone in that Bruins farm system or any of the third or fourth liners, they're going to be excited and hungry when a couple stars leave because then it's their time to shine. So sometimes, as weird as it is, it doesn't seem like it, but sometimes when a couple stars leave, the team overall gets like kind of re-energized and other people step up. And then there's just more players playing well suddenly. It's like it creates a golden opportunity for a bunch of people that are hungry. And then the energy level, all these people are excited again. It raises the energy level for the whole team.
Yeah, I'll give you a perfect example. Justin Brazeau, a guy who's been in the minors basically his entire career, age 26, finally gets an opportunity to play a couple of games at the big league level. His first taste of NHL action, he has 5 goals in 15 games on Boston's fourth line this year. Wow. And 4 of those goals have come in the last 4 games for him.
Yeah. Oh, and so, another thing, a couple of the one-year deals, you guys know, just like football or baseball, whatever. Sometimes those guys, they're on a one-year prove-it deal. They're thinking about, okay, if I really kick ass this year, I could earn an extra $20 or $30 million the next 5 years. So those guys are coming to the rink really excited to play well, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's different for players like James Van Riemsdyk, because James Van Riemsdyk, you know, he's headed towards the end of his career, kind of.
Okay.
You know, I honestly was kind of surprised that no team picked him up, because I thought that, you know, him and Kevin Shattenkirk, he actually won a Stanley Cup in Tampa Bay. You know, I was kind of surprised that Shattenkirk wasn't picked up. And even Danton Heinen, you know, he's put up third line numbers with teams like the Pittsburgh Penguins over the last couple of years. And, you know, it's just kind of surprising when you take a look at some of these players that Boston signed, and it's not like they have horrible numbers. They have, you know, they have produced numbers at the big league level, but it's almost kind of like teams didn't have salary space to pay these guys.
Wow.
So now Boston benefits from the fact that these guys are willing to take less money just so that they can be on a roster. And
a whole combination of
ultimately,
things, like you said,
I mean, how
those,
Dan,
sorry, Steve, go for
you
it.
Know, Danton Heinen scored his 14th goal today. And that may not seem like much, but for a guy that you only signed for the veteran minimum at $1 million for the year, and you're getting 14 goals out of him, I mean, he's basically putting up third-line-type production for the veteran minimum.
Wow. You're right. It's been a whole combination of things. A lot of different things. It's like, yeah, sometimes a lot of things have to go right for it to really click. They're almost better off. I mean, all those guys, too, in the playoffs, man, those guys are all going to be playing hard. And there's less pressure, too. Think about it. Those stars, after that record-setting year, you know that, they were feeling a lot of pressure in the playoffs to, like, keep the record and win the cup. Now it's
right.
Like they're probably playing with a lot less pressure, too.
Well, it's also not to mention this is their 100th season. This is the 100th season of the Boston Bruins.
Wow.
So you can kind of say there's a little bit of that type of pressure where it's like, okay, you know, we can't have our 100th season and field a horrible team. You know, we have to somehow make this 100th season memorable in some sort of way. But just to basically put it, I like what I've gotten out of this team, or what I've seen out of this team. You know, I like the production that they've had. I don't know if they can keep it up for a playoff run, but all I'll say is that ever since they brought in Jim Montgomery as their new head coach, it really seems like he has been able to get a lot out of the younger players, as opposed to what Bruce Cassidy was able to do. But then again, I say that, and Bruce Cassidy won the Stanley Cup in his first year with Vegas last year. So, you know, but anyways, back to the standings right now. In the Atlantic Division, are three playoff teams as of now, guaranteed playoff teams. You have the Boston Bruins with 97 points, the Florida Panthers with 94 points, and the Toronto Maple Leafs with 89 points. On the fringe, on the potentially, let me see, where are the wild card standings right now? The two wild card teams as of now are coming from the Atlantic Division. The Tampa Bay Lightning with 82 points and the Detroit Red Wings with 78 points. I would say kind of alive right now, but fading fast are the Buffalo Sabres with 71 points. Ottawa and Montreal are both eliminated with 62 points. In the Metropolitan Division, you have the New York Rangers leading the way with a 46-20-4 record with 96 points.
And just tied
followed
the game.
And they just tied the game. Followed by the Carolina Hurricanes, who are just 1 point behind at 44-20-7 for 95 points. And the Philadelphia Flyers surprisingly hanging in there at 36-26-9, good for 81 points. So that, as of now, is what the Eastern Conference looks like. Washington and New York, they are still technically alive, but they got some work to do with only 12 games remaining. New Jersey, they're on the cusp of potentially being eliminated. They're only 1 point ahead of Buffalo at 72 points. So, you know, they need a lot of help, basically, if they want to make the playoffs moving forward here. And Pittsburgh and Columbus, I believe I would have them as eliminated at this point. I mean, I feel bad for Pittsburgh, considering the fact that, you know, it's unfortunate that they have a an owner who just doesn't give a shit, to put it bluntly.
What are you doing?
John Henry.
No soup for Sidney. No postseason for Crosby.
Yeah.
No,
and you know what? Sidney Crosby, he almost got traded at the deadline, too. So there is that. You may see that get revisited in the offseason here, where maybe Sidney Crosby may be traded to, oh, I don't know, maybe the Colorado Avalanche, perhaps.
Would they ever trade him into Boston or the Rangers? That would be hilarious. It would they?
Maybe to the Rangers. I highly doubt he would be traded to Boston because, number one, Boston doesn't have they don't have the assets to trade. Let me see. In the Western Conference, we have first for the Central Division, we have the Colorado Avalanche and the Dallas Stars are tied with 95 points apiece, leading the way in the Central Division. And the Winnipeg Jets, they are at 93 points. Right now, it looks like Nashville, they are one of the wild card teams with 88 points. And Vegas is just hanging in there as the second wild card team with 81 points. St. Louis, they got some work to do, but they're still in it with 79 points. And same thing with the Minnesota Wild with 77. Arizona and Chicago, you can technically consider them eliminated.
Okay.
As their records are pretty bad, so to speak. In the Pacific Division, your guaranteed playoff teams as of now, the Vancouver Canucks with 96 points, the Edmonton Oilers with 88 points, and the LA Kings with 83 points. And as I said, Vegas, they're on the outside right now, or they're in that final wild card spot with 81 points. But you know, their margin is slim, essentially. When it comes to them hanging in there, You also have the Calgary Flames of 71, but then again, you know, they're like Buffalo. They're technically still alive, but they're fading rapidly at this point. Seattle is eliminated, I believe, with 69 points. The Anaheim Ducks, they've been gone with 51 points, and the San Jose Sharks, well, it's basically a race between San Jose and Chicago to see who gets the number one pick this year. We'll put it that way. So, needless to say, it's
okay.
Yeah, San Jose, they're a long way away from contention.
Yeah.
But anyways, I mean, let's start with you, Lou. What do you see when it comes to the playoff matchups potentially for the Stanley Cup Finals this season? Any teams that stick out with you for the Eastern Conference or the Western Conference?
Yeah, I know you guys think I'm being crazy, but I think I see a rematch of 1994 with the Rangers and the Canucks.
Oh, wow.
Really?
That'd be cool.
Yes. I mean, both are strong. I mean, yeah, I know probably a lot of people are going to think the Bruins. Yeah, that would be another choice. But, you know, Rangers and Bruins, you know, have had a phenomenal season this year. And I think with the Rangers have beaten the Bruins this year. So I would look at them as a strong candidate to represent the East in the Stanley Cup Finals. Same thing with the Canucks. I mean, yeah, the Jets might give them a run for the money, but, you know, I've seen the Canucks, March Duke Canucks games played. You know, they're strong in their division. Jets, yeah, they have, but, you know, they got their own self. Problems here and there, but I see an upset in the West with the Canucks being the Jets. So I'm looking at this 94 rematch. I hope so. Well, one good hope.
Alex, what are your thoughts on the way the Stanley Cup playoffs are shaping up right now? Any teams that you've taken notice of?
Yeah, I mean, I like what Lou said before. Not just I'm full for the Rangers, of course, but that'd be cool or great storyline. I mean, the Rangers are as viable as anyone in the East right now. Boston mm-hmm. could easily get in. I'd say, yeah. I mean, my two favorites in the East. I'm not going to shock the world at all. It's pretty conservative. They're like two of the powers would be either Boston or the Rangers. And then I like Colorado a lot out west. That'd be kind of cool. Chris Drury, obviously the Rangers GM, went to high school at the same time as him. Cool. So I always root for Drury. He was two grades above me there, but Connecticut guy. He obviously won Rookie of the Year. He was an All-Star way back for the Avalanche in the league. So I think it would be kind of cool if the Rangers played the Avalanche. Like Lou said, it would be even cooler, though, if they did it rewind the clock to 94 when Messier, predicted it and they beat the Canucks in seven. That'd be pretty cool. And, wow, not to mention, look at the calendar, 94-2024. So what is that, 30-year anniversary?
30 years.
That would be kind of cool. That would be kind of poetic and a great storyline and all that cool stuff. So, yeah, my heart says Rangers, Canucks, and then my head, I do think the Rangers are going to emerge. Maybe Rangers versus Avalanche. I think the Rangers got what it takes finally to get back this year.
Now, you know, I would kind of – I think New York is definitely in the mix. My team, though, I feel for the Eastern Conference is the Florida Panthers. You take a look at a team that made it to the Stanley Cup Finals last year. You know, they have the experience, and you know they end up going out at the trade deadline. You know, they made a couple of acquisitions. I mean, it's definitely they're definitely going for it this year. Just like last year, but you know they got some grit in Kyle Okposo at the deadline. They also got Vladimir Tarasenko. I mean, my God, you want to talk about scorers, and not to mention Tarasenko, he has a ring. He won it with St. Louis back in 2019. So,
wow.
I mean, you want to talk about players that have experience in the I mean, obviously Okposo doesn't have experience, but you know, Tarasenko has experience in the Stanley Cup Finals. Obviously, this whole Florida team has experience from having made it to the Cup Finals last year. I mean, there's definitely it almost seems like Florida is one of those teams that is like they never die, essentially. Like, you're basically waiting for them to fall apart, kind of like Golden State, like in basketball. You're waiting for the Golden State Warriors to fall apart, and they never do.
Yeah.
Die hard. The energy. Yeah, they just keep going. They reload or they keep moving forward. No matter the
I mean,
everything points to a demise, to them going south, but they keep persevering.
Yeah. And I mean, I like what I've seen out of this Florida team. Now, granted, yeah, like I said, I'm a diehard Boston Bruins fan, you know. I live by the Bruins, I die by the Bruins. But at the same time, I almost feel like Jim Montgomery is going to make the same mistake that he made last season, where he rotated the goalies the entire season, and then he decides, I'm going to go with Ullmark all the way until Game 7, even when he's shitting the bed. And they had a 3-1 series lead against Florida last season. And he basically decided, I'm going to stick with Ullmark all the way until Game 7, where I'm then going to put in a cold Jeremy Swayman. Now, Swayman played the game of his life in Game 7, but it just, you know, ultimately it just didn't pan out. But, you know, I kind of feel like we're going to see sort of the same thing this year where, you know, it's because normally by the playoffs, you have established who your number one goaltender is going to be. And with Boston, yeah, it's different because it's like, it's almost like they have two number one goaltenders. You know what I mean?
Yes.
That gets tricky in the playoffs because then you go down 2-0 in the first period suddenly, and then it's like, oh, shoot, okay, now we're going to go to the other one. And then 2 days later, then the series is tied 1-1. There's so many different scenarios that can really bite you in the ass if you start playing, getting fancy, switching goalies back and forth. It can never, and sometimes it just doesn't end well. Everyone, I mean, it's like a quarter aerosol. If you have two or three decent quarterbacks, it means you have no good quarterback. Like, you need one legit. I butchered the saying, but you know what I'm. You catch my drift? What I was trying to allude to. Like, you need that one person, the leader, especially in the playoffs. You can't go back and forth every quarter, or every time a goal gets scored, or every time there's an interception. You know, in football, it's like that's got to be really tough for a team in the playoffs. And who's it the toughest for? The goalies, because they're like, oh my god, if I let this fuck in. Yeah, then they start playing head games and lacking confidence, and then they're looking over their shoulder. They're looking over their shoulder a minute. Is the coach going to pull me again? I just think that hardly can ever end well if you're a really good team.
Well,
like, is Boston still going back and forth?
That's why
they
feel that it should have been better.
Yeah,
that's why I feel that it would have been better if they had gotten rid of Ullmark at the deadline, like they tried to do.
Yeah, I just think it's better for the morale and for the focus. You want to have one clear-cut starter. Because if you start playing, you know, oh, you're our starter, but we might pull you, it just messes everyone's up, their psyche. It kills their confidence, I would think. As a goalie, it's already such a tough position.
Now, when it comes to the Western Conference, I want to say Vancouver. You can't You can't rule out Colorado, though, even though they got, you know, a lot of players on that Colorado team have, you know, they were on that Stanley Cup winning team a couple years ago, a lot of those players still. I mean, even though they got rid of one of their core defensemen in Byron Boehm at the deadline, you know, they still – they're like a well-oiled machine, basically. And actually, let me check real quick because I'm not sure if – okay, yeah, no. And they're playing like they've been playing without one of their alternate captains, Gabriel Landeskog, who has been out the entire season.
Oh, yeah, Landeskog.
So let me just double-check on that, and let me see if he's going to play at all. It says he could return for the Stanley Cup playoffs. So if he returns for the playoffs and if he's anywhere close to 100%, I mean, Colorado, they are just so dangerous when they have everybody playing. Oh, not to mention, they went out and got Casey Mittelstadt from Buffalo, one of Buffalo's, if not Buffalo's, highest scorer this year. So, I mean, okay, yeah, forget it. I'm not going Vancouver. I'm going Colorado.
They are
for the West.
They are loaded to the gills with explosive players. I mean,
yeah, Colorado is just fucking stacked this year.
Seven or eight goals if they're hot. They're loaded. Don't they have three lines of really good scores? They have three lines of, like, top scores, of really good scores. They're loaded.
All right, now, before we go into the world of baseball, JB, have you been paying any attention to March Madness?
No, I have not. I've only paid attention to the loss, unfortunately, for almost everybody in Whispers of Kentucky.
Yeah, you know, I want to get your thoughts on that. What are your thoughts on Kentucky bowing out early for the second straight year?
Well, one thing that I'm not really a basketball person, but I was wondering why Kentucky had such a high seed when they weren't really they were what, ranked like about they were ranked down there. And they give them like a number two seed or something like that. And I'm thinking
number three.
I'm thinking WTF.
Let's remember they play in the hardest conference.
To me, just because you play in a hard conference, that shouldn't mean it. That shouldn't shouldn't have anything to do with it, really. To me, that's just me talking. And me talking, I'm not a basketball person. I mainly like to see, when I watch these basketball games, I want to see like a number 10, number 11 seed. I want to see a number 10 or 11 seed. Maybe a six seed win the whole tournament. I want to see a lot of these. I want to see a lot of these teams like UConn and Kansas. You get tired. I get tired of hearing about them, and it's like, why don't you just, you know, I just want to see somebody else win.
Well, Kansas, they did get dropped by Gonzaga earlier today, so Kansas is out of it. But UConn, they are considered more of a front runner. So, but
and,
you know, a lot of it, JB, has to do with how universities recruit. I mean, look at Alabama in college football. You know, why have they been so successful throughout however many seasons that Nick Saban was there?
Sure.
A lot of it had to do with the recruiting.
College rivalry, I'm not shocking the world with this. It's all about recruiting, man. And then when you get to a Final Four or, you know, near a national championship game in football, look at the Washington Huskies out of nowhere. Now they're one of the best teams in football. That never used to happen. It's like,
they'll figure
it out. It takes one or two of these big runs, and then these teams get really good recruits, and then they can be awesome for the next decade or the next 20 years. Who's to say not? So.
Hmm.
But that's also why Saban stepped away. Now it's a lot about money, too, with the NIE deals. But that's a different subject.
Right.
And to show you about, you know, how I get into basketball, I was following UC. I was watching UC. And I really didn't think that they had a bad record. And I did see a team on there that, God, they had a worse record than UC. But then again, you got to go by all the different conferences, you know, if you, it's almost like football. You know, you win a conference,
right,
you're automatically, you know, in the NCAA tournament. You know, how they decide the other teams, I don't know. One
Which
thing
that explains how NC State got in.
Yeah. One thing that really blew my mind, and this shows you how much I really get into basketball, college basketball, and that is the NIT. And I was looking at the bracket and I thought, that is an awful small bracket. I thought that the NIT had the same amount of teams, but they don't.
Yeah.
But they don't. It's
There's a lot of teams, if I remember correctly, that rejected the NIT invitation this season because they got pissed off that they were left out. Matter of fact, I know Seton Hall, I believe Seton Hall got invited to the NIT tournament and they declined it.
No.
What was it, Seton Hall or who?
St.
John.
Oh, St. John. Okay. Yeah, there was, I mean, you know, when you have teams that feel that they should be in March Madness, like, for example, the Big East, they got completely completely shafted of a couple of teams this year in getting left out of the tournament. You know, obviously those teams end up going into the NIT tournament, but there are some occasions like what happened this season where, you know, those teams want nothing to do with the NIT tournament.
No.
After not making March Madness.
I mean, it is like it is what it is. It's kind of like an insult. It's a slap in the face. Especially the teams who feel like they got gapped, who got screwed over. They're like, you know what?
Yeah.
F you. I'm not going there. F you. No, we're not going there. We do not accept your invitation. No thanks.
Right.
And what was really surprising to me is I knew UC had a chance to get into the NCAA tournament, but it was probably because they lost who was it that won the Big 12? Was it Baylor? I think
Baylor made it in.
Okay. I think they lost to Baylor. But the one thing that really got me was how high of a seed UC got in the NIT. And, you know, me being a non-basketball person, I didn't really understand how UC could have gotten or how UC got a higher seed in the NIT. I know if they would have made it to the NCAA tournament, they probably would have been like a number 9 or number 10 seed, maybe even higher than that. I don't know.
Yeah,
I know. It's definitely, it is weird the way some of the teams are seeded and whatnot, but you know, it's definitely that's definitely where it gets confusing. Another thing I wanted to ask you, JB, what do you think about Michael Chandler and Conor McGregor being officially made?
I did not read that. Is it official that they are fighting now?
Yep, it is official.
Okay. What is it UFC like 303 in June or something like that?
Let me double check. It says summer, it'll be in the summer, but it's unknown in particular the exact date.
Okay, but the fight itself is for sure.
Is official, yes.
Okay, it's just the date that's not going to be, that is not official yet.
Right.
And what really
otherwise the fight is technically already set.
Okay, that's, I wanted to really see Dana White, have I'm wondering what kind of questions that they're going to give him about Conor McGregor tonight after the UFC fight. And
yeah.
Talking about the UFC fight earlier tonight, there was a guy that was disqualified for biting another guy.
Oh, great. Another biting.
Yeah, not just that, but he's not just that, but he's been released as well.
And it was like about and yeah, it was like about an hour later. He was released, and I thought, you know what? If you're going to be that stupid, you know, you deserve to be released.
Some people are.
Yeah, Igor Severino was officially released after biting Andre Lima in the second round.
Right. I saw that. This disqualified for biting, and I thought, what the hell? And I looked on YouTube, and I saw that, and I was thinking, why would you even think about doing something like that if you're in the UFC and this is your first fight and you're just, well, he just messed it up for himself, really.
Not just that, but now he's going to have real problems. Not only did he screw up the biggest opportunity in his career, but now he's going to have real problems with the Nevada State Athletic Commission too.
Right. I saw that, and I thought, man, if he thinks that you know, Dana White, you know, letting him go, if he thinks that's bad, wait until he comes up to Nevada State Athletic Commission. See, they're not going to
be. Yeah, that's the least of his worries.
Yeah, they're not going to. They're not going to be as lenient as Dana White.
No. We do have, going into Major League Baseball, Shohei Ohtani, maybe perhaps the biggest star in the entire league, is officially involved in a controversy of sorts, as his interpreter was officially fired by the LA Dodgers earlier this week. Ipe Mizuhara, who had been not just his friend, but also his interpreter, dating all the way back to before he signed with the LA Angels back in 2017. Now, Mizuhara has been accused of theft as well as illegal gambling. And you may wonder how this all came about. Well, apparently he has a gambling problem. He has a whole bunch of gambling debts. And also, not to mention, there was a probe into an alleged illegal gambling operation taking place in Southern California, according to the LA Times. Attorneys for Ohtani told the LA Times that Ohtani had been the victim of a massive theft, and while the statement did not specify who had committed the theft, the implication was that it was by his interpreter. And according to ESPN, it was reported that upwards of $4.5 million have been wired from a bank account in Ohtani's name to the alleged gambling ring. Sports gambling remains illegal in California. And a spokesperson for Ohtani had initially told ESPN that the two-time MVP had wired the money to pay off gambling debts which Mizuhara had accrued. The spokesperson later retracted that and pointed to the attorney's statement concerning theft. So basically, and I said this on Lou's show earlier, it sounds to me like this is Ohtani's way of basically taking a step back, and especially when you consider how big of a star he is in Major League Baseball. It kind of seems like this is his way of, if he's even involved at all in this gambling situation here. First off, gambling is illegal in baseball still, in sports actually, in general. It's kind of funny, though, when you consider that that major sports teams and major sports organizations have or sports leagues have, you know, endorsements and sponsorships with gambling sites. Kind of defeats the purpose, right? So it's kind of funny that all of a sudden, you know, gambling is such a huge problem, you know, if players or members of the management staff do it. However, though, the interpreter had claimed that he was helping pay off a gambling debt of his, and that's why the money was being transferred in accounts of or in increments of $500,000 apiece to that gambling ring. Mizuhara did make sure to state, though, that this is all him. Ohtani does not gamble and has never gambled while being a professional athlete with the in Major League Baseball. And also, an attorney for Matthew Boyer, who is the alleged bookmaker involved in this, said in a statement to ESPN that he never met or spoke with Shohei Ohtani. Mizuhara had placed bets with Boyer on various sports, not including baseball, going all the way back to 2021. On Tuesday, Mizuhara told ESPN that he'd asked Ohtani to pay off his gambling debt. He even said, obviously, he wasn't happy about it, and he said he would help me out to make sure I never do this again. He decided to pay it off for me. I want everyone to know Shohei had zero involvement in betting. I want people to know I did not know that this was illegal. I learned my lesson the hard way. I will never do sports betting ever again, yada, yada, yada. And
story's so weird.
And basically, he then disavowed these comments later on, telling ESPN that Ohtani was unaware of the gambling debts and had not transferred any money. So it's like literally, this is all over the place.
It really is. I wasn't trying to like blow the. I wasn't when I chimed in on Lucia. I wasn't automatically saying, "Hey," I wasn't trying to point the finger at Ohtani. But there's got to be some sort of spotlight on Ohtani right now. I mean, come on. Not this isn't like 10 grand in some bar in New York, which is a lot of money. Obviously, gambling's terrible, and a lot of people owe different points. So they'll get into deep where they can get seriously hurt, where they need to borrow money, obviously. We're all smart enough to know that. But $5 million? That's a number I've never heard of, gambling debt. And then with, like, a mob boss? And then now this guy's saying, oh, Tony never knew about it. Okay, so he's trying to cover for Ohtani. Oh, and it was never baseball. He's saying, like, all the things to, like, try to make sure that Ohtani's not going to get in trouble. I mean, think about it. Oh, definitely wasn't baseball, though. Like, they're kind of covering their tracks, covering their fingerprints on this. There's a lot of smoke there, what I'm looking at with Ohtani himself. What? He's like the most marketed athlete right now, maybe on the planet. Why would he be involved?
Right.
Why would he offer to pay this guy, not 50 grand cash, but wire $5 million? I'm sorry. I think Ohtani, let's have some action. If anything happens, you have to say I was not involved, but I will front the money and let's place our bets. There's pictures of Ohtani and this guy wearing, like, you guys can look it up. There's some article on Barstool or Deadspin or something. There's pictures of him wearing, like, Lakers jerseys, Dallas Cowboy jerseys. they're fans of a lot of different sports. Ohtani, too. So don't think he's just this quiet guy who just focuses on baseball. I think they were both in it, and Ohtani was having this guy do his dirty work. Hey, if anything happens, you got to say it's only you. I'll put up the money for us. If we get busted, it wasn't me. but here's the money. I mean, that wouldn't that that's almost like what I would predict. It just, it's too weird otherwise. I think Ohtani was in on it.
I'll tell you one thing. If Ohtani was in on it and he and everything is being denied right now, he may be in more serious trouble than just being suspended by the league.
That's why the league didn't want us to find out. If it was some backup on the Brewers or on, you know, in Tampa Bay, his ass would have been suspended right now. It's Ohtani who's like, the,
right.
you know, the Michael Jordan of base, the Michael Jordan of baseball. Of course, the commissioner, he's like the pure. He just signed the biggest deal ever in sports history. they didn't want any of this to come out. If it was some backup minor leaguer on the Yankees, he would have already been suspended.
Yeah,
it's a crazy story. I think he got busted in some serious stuff.
What are your thoughts on this, Lou? On Shohei Ohtani getting involved in this?
Dude, why is he loaning anyone mafia people $5 million? That's crazy.
Yeah, exactly. Why would you loan $5 million for what? I mean, now you're. I mean, now. In terms of his own development game, his career is now hot water. Baseball is going through another scandal. And,
but it wasn't Ohtani. It wasn't Ohtani. The guy's covering for him.
So, and the players union is having trouble with one of their big shots. So the whole thing is just like, you know, it's coming apart.
Do you think he was placing bets? Lou, do you think Ohtani was having the guy like, hey, let's bet the Cowboys again?
It's possible.
You know, here's the money. Again, if anything ever happens, I wasn't involved. Here's the money. You know, the guy works for him. It's like a guy, if you have a drug problem, here, go buy the drug. If you get pulled over, it's your drug, not mine. But I'll pay for both of our drugs. But if anything happens, it's yours, not mine. You know, rich people do that all the time. The guy's basically like his gopher, like his secretary. Like he's doing some dirty work for him. I don't know. That's what I think.
Yeah.
JB, what are your thoughts on this whole situation, JB?
I kind of think that Ohtani is... behind it too. I think once they do an investigation, they're going to find out that he was behind it. I actually think it might take about a year or 2 years maybe. And after they find out, you know, if they find out that he was behind it, I can see them banning him from baseball just like they did Pete Rose.
Yep. It's the same thing, except this is a heck of a lot more money. So why wouldn't they ban him?
Well, I mean,
This is huge.
I mean, didn't Pete Rose actually?
He was betting on the team. He was managing the Reds. He was placing bets in the dugout. You know, it's bookies all over. I'm assuming what was it, 70s or 80s? It's not $5 million, but still totally bad. But yeah, he was betting he was betting on the Reds. Like, I'm taking our team tonight. For $2,000, and then they found out about it. Ohtani's betting all different sports upwards of $5 million, so it's kind of like different, but I think even bigger in this case. And like you said, Pete got banned forever. What the heck's gonna happen to Ohtani? But Ohtani's like the golden child, like the face of baseball. So,
yeah. I was reading. All in all, Pete Rose lost like about I think they said like over 20 years of him betting. He lost like about $100 million.
I didn't know that. That was worse. I didn't know that, JB. Good call. I did not know that. Jesus. Wow.
I think I did.
Wow. I never knew the numbers. And, well, the biggest reason Pete never got into the Hall of Fame, they even the Selig at the time, the commissioner, you guys remember, he said he was – I read a book. I didn't read it, but I read a couple of articles about it. Apparently, the commissioner was like, basically, if Pete finally just admits it, even just face-to-face to me in a one-on-one meeting, we'll forgive him. And Pete always – Pete will never admit that he gambled. So, who knows? Maybe Ohtani can clean and they suspend him for a year.
Yeah.
I don't know.
My thoughts on this, and that is I can see Pete Rose getting into the Hall of Fame only when he passes away.
I'd say that.
Wow. No, I'll tell you this right now. If somehow Shohei Ohtani is found to be implicated in this and he gets let off with a slap on the wrist, Pete Rose better be fucking inducted and unbanned
yeah.
from the league
yes.
as soon as possible.
Yeah, because that's a
– because that's some serious fucking double standards there.
Of course, shit.
And hopefully Pete Rose is alive – and I'm sure that he has some lawyers, and he's going to tell them, hey, if you're going to let him off, you better let me off too.
Yes. Pete's having some drinks out in Cincinnati somewhere. He still gets out and about in town. I'm sure he's looking at with some people right now reading about this.
Oh,
Pete
yeah.
Rose is looking at this right now. He's talking about it right now.
Yeah.
You know, at the same time, though, I mean, does he really have a case against Manfred? Because it was it was Selig that did it to him, right?
The biggest thing was, I'm pretty sure, JB, you're a big Cincy guy. I mean, Pete Rose, the hit machine. The biggest thing was, apparently, he just refused to admit that he did wrong. So the commissioner's like, I'm sorry, you're going to always stay banned. Pete won't just say, you know what, I effed up. I effed up, I'm sorry. He won't publicly do that. And they're just like, all right, you're never getting in. You won't show any contrition. You won't say you're sorry. The door's locked on you. Pete's ego has kind of done him in with this. He won't admit he's wrong.
Right. I really think that the number one thing is that Pete Rose denied he ever did any of this. And they even said, you know, hey, if you say that, you know, you did, we'll let you in and, you know, put you in the Hall of Fame and stuff. And he adamantly denied ever betting on the sport.
Wow. So if Ohtani, if it comes out, like you said, JB, you're dead on. It's not going to happen tomorrow or next month. This will take like a year. If, eight thousand attorneys, you know how all this bullshit goes. When it finally comes down to it, if he looks like he's dead guilty, if Ohtani admits, he has to admit it or else he might get banned. Because Pete's banned. I mean, this is crazy. This is going to be the biggest sports story in 20 years if this is true. I mean, one of them.
I can almost tell you this right now, Alex. I have a feeling he doesn't get banned. If he's found guilty,
it might be impossible. Yeah, it's impossible. I think the current player, you can't really ban him. It's all he murdered. But, I mean,
slap on the wrist.
Got to be some penalty, though. Or maybe suspended a year. He just signed the biggest contract in the history of sports, too. This is crazy.
Yeah, he'll get a slap on the wrist, and I guarantee you, he will get a slap on the wrist, and, you know, the first thing that should happen is Pete Rose better be in fucking contact with Major League Baseball right away. because
I'm sure he will too.
They're sending a limo for him to drive him to Canton, or sorry, to Cooperstown.
Yeah,
if, I mean, it should be like, okay, you're in, buddy. But watch, this is, it couldn't have happened to. This is the worst possible player for this to have to happen for the league, because again, he's like the golden boy.
Yeah.
You know, the international. He's like the international Michael Jordan of sports. He is the face of baseball right now. And he just signed the biggest contract in the history of sports. I mean, you talk about terrible timing. This is a hell of a story.
Right.
Yeah.
It couldn't be any bigger, the stakes.
And somebody, correct me if I'm wrong, can't Shohei Ohtani, he can pitch, play first base, play third base. I mean, you know, the only thing Pete Rose couldn't do was pitch. We didn't see him pitch anyway. But he almost played the outfield, first and third base. And I think he played second base too. And, you know, this Shohei Ohtani, I mean, he can play first, third. He can pitch. It's like, what can he do?
I guess these guys that can play a lot of positions love to gamble. There's a pattern here. Something.
Yeah, really.
I mean, it just the whole thing with me is I just feel like because you know, Shohei Ohtani is such a huge part of Major League Baseball, you know, not just in Major League Baseball, but internationally. You know, I just feel like we're going to see it coming where he's basically going to get a slap on the wrist for something that Pete Rose got banned for.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to allude to.
I
wasn't trying to say, oh, my God, he's bigger than Michael Jordan. I just think he's such a big figure because overseas, like worldwide, he's such a big figure. So it's just like, you know, I wasn't trying to say the guy's better than Babe Ruth. I mean, the guy's incredible. I still think, like, whatever. I'm not going to get into it now, but I'm not the biggest Ohtani guy overall. I think he's really talented, but, you know, hasn't won a playoff game yet in his career. Been injured quite a bit. But, I mean, as far as, like, the money involved and the publicity and the advertising for MLB, he is the face of the sport.
Right. I mean, it's just basically, like, you know, Major League Baseball, this is why I feel that he's going to get a slap on the wrist, is because they stand to lose a hell of a lot if they if they ban him.
Yeah, apparently they're trying not to let this out.
As opposed to giving him a slap on the wrist.
I guess ESPN heard about this like a year ago. Did you guys read that? I just like saw it for 30 seconds today.
Yeah.
They were trying to like keep this swept under the rug. They were trying not to let anyone find out about this. It's not the league. Whereas Pete Rose got blown up overnight when they found out. But this, they're like, oh, don't tell anyone.
Oh, yeah.
Double standard? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you want to talk about double standards? Yeah, definitely. Just wow. It's... there's definitely
I mean when I heard that guy, I mean, imagine that. Oh yeah, I work for this guy. He said he'd cover it. I'm thinking, okay, what, like, for you or me, maybe someone, if I needed to pay for, you know, if I lost $100 bet, I'd maybe ask someone. If I need $5 million, there's no way he's loaning someone $5 million to cover an illegal crime. And he's this big of a figure with all people looking at him, like he's under a microscope. There's no way he's not
right.
Involved. There's no, you know what
right.
I mean? Why would he risk his career suicide? $5 million? Sure, here you go. Here, put me in touch. I'll wire this mob boss $5 million. But it's not me. But sure, I'll cover your $5 million. Like, he's picking up a lunch tab, $5 million. I mean, come on. He's got to be in.
$5 million.
I mean, Ohtani
was placing bets. I mean, no pun intended. I'd bet on that.
Right. At the same time, though, you know, kind of like what you brought up earlier today. How the hell do you let him anywhere near your bank account if it's you know, if this guy did everything all on his own and Shohei had nothing to do with it, you know, how the hell do you even let him anywhere near your bank account?
Here's my PIN number. Yeah, sure. Here, go for it. Pick up some soda and burgers for our barbecue. Here's $100. Here's whatever. The guy's rich. Yeah. Oh, if you want to go on a vacation with our wives, yeah, I'll cover 20 grand. You know, this guy, it's, you know, money's not an issue for him. But when it comes to something so illegal, that's where it's like, no way. He had to have known.
It's just, honestly, it really is mind-boggling at this point that, you know, we've gotten to this point, basically.
I agree there.
With Shohei.
Was the money wired literally to like a dark, like underworld, like a mob boss? I mean, this story gets worse and worse. I just read it like
it was.
I haven't really even read it, really. I just started learning about it on Lou's show. Is it like he was wiring the money to some like criminal?
It said that the money was wired to illegal gambling. So basically, it was wired to a bookmaker, to a bookmaker by the name of Matthew Boyer.
Okay, so again, if this guy is not a player or a coach, I think the interpreter would have been able to bet on other sports. So again, who's not allowed to? Who would have to do it illegally? Ohtani. If you or me right now wanted to bet, if I had Ohtani's money, I could bet $1 million on the Dolphins winning the Super Bowl next year. It's legal. It's legal now. You can do it on your cell phone.
At the same time, though, he is considered a front office member, though.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, because if it's legal, if it was only really just him, he would be using, you know, DraftKings or FanDuel. A thousand different websites now, which is a whole problem in itself. But, I mean, it is legal.
The only thing I look at it is that he's considered to be a front office member.
Okay.
And that's why the Dodgers had to make an immediate decision like they did to fire him.
Wow. But what I was saying though, if it wasn't Ohtani, this interpreter can legally go and place a bet. So why is he using a mob? Why is he using a criminal to place the bet? Why? Because Ohtani. Because if Ohtani is on that account, if Ohtani logs into DraftKings tonight and tries to bet on UConn, they're going to say, holy shit, Shohei Ohtani's betting. That's how Calvin Ridley and a couple NFL guys got busted, just betting, you know, $50 on a random game. But if they're doing big money, they can't use any of their information. So then they're talking to some criminal, you know, in the underworld.
Yeah.
So it's like if it was just the interpreter doing this, the interpreter could have just logged in, you know, in a hotel and legally placed a bet on his own. Why did they go to the mob with dirty money? Because Ohtani can't be discovered. Well, now he is discovered. So it's
right.
Like they were acting illegal because Ohtani was involved. Otherwise, they could have done it legally, like you, me, or anyone. The interpreter could place the legal bet. Ohtani cannot. That's why they're going through illegal criminal channels to do criminal activity. This got Ohtani's fingerprints on it.
Yeah, it's crazy, but I mean, obviously, I'm pretty sure there's probably going to be. I wouldn't be surprised if we find out something new, like tomorrow, for example, like when we all wake up tomorrow, and you know, we see something. we see something show up on like ESPN or something.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll tell us who Ohtani's March Madness picks were. Who his Final Four picks?
Oh my god.
Okay, yeah, I get it. You think you can do that?
I'm from Connecticut. I hope Ohtani took the Huskies. Maybe they'll tell us.
Yeah. Tell us, Ohtani. What do you see in your crystal ball?
Ohtani's picks. That'd be a headline of yes. Ohtani pool. The Ohtani bracket.
Show me the money.
Shohei the money. Shohei the money.
Ohtani's
final. Shohei's Final Four selection.
Oh, yeah.
But outside of Shohei Ohtani, though, we did get an official signing this week. The New York Mets, they agreed to terms with J.D. Martinez on a one-year, $12 million contract. And the first thing that comes to mind, why did it take this long for J.D. Martinez to sign a deal with a team?
Yeah.
You mean to tell me that there was literally nobody interested in bringing in J.D. Martinez, a guy who hit, what, 33 homers last year with a .270 batting average?
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
I read something about it. Gina Metzger, I read a quick article today, somewhere on Facebook. He had been interviewed saying he was in contact with a few teams, including the Giants, but since he's on a one-year deal and he's a little bit older in baseball years, he's, what, 36? He said, no offense to the Giants, but the ballpark is not good for home run hitters. He's like, I can hit more homers in New York at this stadium. It's a one-year contract, and I want to prove that I'm still good. You know, if he signs somewhere else and doesn't have the production, you know what I mean? The best place for him would have been Cincinnati or Yankee Stadium with, you know, more offensive ballpark. So that was
right.
One of the things. But it's crazy, yeah. I mean, then he's 36 and he only DHs. So a lot of those teams, now, you guys know, are kind of using the DH to give fielders a day off. There's not a lot of just regular DHs now.
Well, I'll tell you right now, he's definitely, I would assume he's probably going to put up similar numbers with the New York Mets.
Yeah, I mean, they're still probably not a playoff team, but it'll help their lineup. That's a big move. One-year deal. Yeah, he could hit 40 bombs, and then he's a free agent, and he can go anywhere.
And I understand, I understand the whole age thing, but, I mean, come on, Justin Turner is around the same age, and he signed almost immediately. He took a little bit of time, but, you know, he signed with the Blue Jays a lot sooner than J.D. Martinez did.
Yeah, it is weird. You're right. It took a long time for him. Right before opening day. He's not even starting the minors for like a couple weeks. He's not going to be there for opening day as a Met.
Yeah. Yeah, that's another thing too. He's given the Mets his consent to allow him to start the season in the minors. It says he'll spend about 10 days either in extended spring training or in AAA before joining the big club.
We'll see. Still have no pitching, but it'll make the lineup better. They'll score some runs.
Yes.
Yeah, but still, it's still kind of surprised. I'm still surprised, at least, that it took teams this long to come to a deal with him.
It's been kind of weird, though. If you do look, I agree with you, but if you do look, it's kind of a pattern. It's happened to him the last several years, right? He's been on Boston, Dodgers, another team, too. He's bouncing around a little bit. Maybe it's, I don't know. Everyone says he's like a great leader and like really smart about like a good teammate, but he keeps moving around a lot. Around though, why? It's kind of weird. He scores 30 home runs a year, hits 30 bombs, and apparently a nice guy. And then he keeps going from team to team. It's like, you know what I mean? It looks a little weird. You think some team would want to, like,
exactly
sign him for four years and have him retire on their team if all these teams really like him. It's kind of odd.
Elsewhere around the league, the Texas Rangers, they agreed to a one-year, $4.5 million deal with Michael Lorenzen, formerly of the Detroit Tigers and the Philadelphia Phillies. The deal also contains another $2.5 million in performance bonuses. Apart from Jordan Montgomery and Blake Snell, Michael Lorenzen was the best starter still available outside of those two players. He waited out the market in search of a multi-year deal, even though it looked like apparently he had a contract in waiting, I believe, with Philadelphia, but he decided to look elsewhere. And I mean, he did have, after he got traded from the Tigers, he did have a horrible second half. So that kind of probably played a role into it. But regardless, though, it's, I'll tell you one thing. He definitely would have been an upgrade for the Red Sox when it comes to their pitching staff. But, you know, I guess whatever. And speaking of Blake Snell, he signed with San Francisco 2 years, $62 million. Good.
Like a million a week almost. Jeez. Monopoly money.
Yeah.
$62 million. I'm kind of surprised that he was able to sign for that much still, despite waiting, you know, all this time.
Lou, do you like him a lot? Were you pissed the Yankees were rumored at be in on him? Were you mad that they didn't get him, or are you kind of like, whatever?
Yeah, it doesn't really bother me.
Seems like kind of a weird, I don't know. He gets his barn. He walks a lot. He also has trouble getting through, like, the fifth inning a lot. I don't know. He had a Cy Young year, and now he's trying to cash in. It's like people are like, no. I mean, I think he's a little bit overrated.
I don't know. I mean, I was just kind of surprised that, you know, somehow that he lasted this long, and yet still, instead of getting, you know, a short term, I mean, technically it still is short term, it's 2 years, but he still got paid, you know, $62 million. Normally the longer you go on into even into the point of where you end up waiting until the season almost begins, normally you have to settle for a much shorter contract, not just in years, but also in money.
Yeah, you're right. Where you can still get that much.
Yeah. So it's still, you know, it's still kind of surprising to me. Also, speaking of free agent pitchers, apparently Jordan Montgomery has reopened contract discussions with the New York Yankees.
Oh, wow. Wow. He was pissed when they traded him the first time. He's never gone back to New York. He was really pissed off when they moved him the first time. Kind of like Bob never
returned. So there is that. There is that to keep in mind.
Perfect fit.
Moving
for
forward
Garrett
here.
Cole. Fill in for Garrett Cole. Makes too much sense.
No, not saying that he's going to get signed, but, you know, I think it's a good sign, at least, the fact that, you know, that you're seeing contract discussions be reopened here.
Yeah.
Especially for a guy who is, you know, who is still somehow out there on the market.
He's a Boris guy too, right, Steve?
I believe so, yeah.
He's just like a hostage. Boris is like, I want $50 billion. The player's like, yeah, whatever he says. Show us the money.
Yeah, what he said.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, I just can't believe that somehow, you know, he hasn't been signed yet.
Yeah. Well, he's going to end up somewhere.
It's just really surprising to me. But
probably Boris telling him to hold out for more money.
Yeah, possibly. Possibly, yeah, that could be a possibility, definitely. Also, the Diamondbacks, they announced that Eduardo Rodriguez has been shut down from throwing due to a left lateral latissimus strain. He will open the season on the injured list, but the timeline is unclear apart from that as far as to how long he will be on the shelf. So that's definitely something to keep track of, especially when you consider the fact that they want to go back to a potential World Series appearance again. You know, it's funny. We want to talk about stacked teams potentially in Major League Baseball. Here's how stacked the Baltimore Orioles are. The fact that they had to send down Jackson Holliday, who is their number one prospect, and the son of Matt Holliday, might I add. They sent down Jackson Holliday. And they also sent down Heston Kjerstad, who is probably their number two hitting prospect.
I'm doing a fantasy draft tomorrow where the dynasty, so you pick minor leaguers. I'm looking people up, Steve. The Orioles have by far and away the number one catching prospect. They already have Adley Rutschman. They have this 19-year-old, 6'4", Dominican guy who's hit like 400 in the minors. So next year, they're converting him to first base. So he'll be the next guy up next year. Orioles are just disgusting right now. They have, like, you know, whatever. Maybe five of the best 15 prospects in baseball. All coming up one by one.
Wow.
Yeah, like you said, Holliday is considered the best batting prospect in the world. Holliday. And he didn't even make the roster. Yeah. They're loaded. AL East is loaded.
Jesus.
At least he's scary.
Yeah. But anyways, that's going to do it for tonight's show. A reminder, we do have the Survivor 46 recap podcast on Thursday night. Not sure if there's going to be a show next Saturday night. I'm not sure because due to Easter, I gotta go somewhere Sunday fairly early, so I'm probably gonna have to get to sleep earlier than normal next Saturday night. So we'll see if we're gonna have a show or not. With that being said, though, thank you to Lou, Alex, JB, and Diane for joining me tonight. I will keep everybody informed whether or not there will be a show next week. But everybody have a great weekend, and we will see you guys on Thursday for the Survivor 46 recap podcast.